If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
Introducing Batiste's wet-activated and touch-activated dry shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste dry shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Hello and welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Ellie Cawthorn. In today's episode, we'll be speaking to Catherine Bailey, the author of Fay's War, the true story of a mother, her missing sons, and the plot to kill Hitler. It's an account of the traumatic repercussions experienced by the family of Ulrich von Hassel, one of the conspirators behind the 20th of July plot to kill Hitler in 1944. Our world history editor, Matt Elton, caught up with Catherine to find out more.
So your new book is called Fay's War. For people who might not know, who is the title character and what stage do we find her at the start of the book?
Well, of course, Fay is the central character of the book, but the man who lies at the heart of it, a man of extraordinary moral courage, is her father, Ulrich von Hassel. He was a Prussian aristocrat and a diplomat, but what makes him so compelling is that he was one of the few high-ranking Nazis to join the German resistance at the very start of the war. During the 30s, he'd been Germany's ambassador to Italy. He had close ties with Hitler. But Kristallnacht, the pogrom, the Nazis' pogrom against the Jews, was a turning point for him. And it was then that he joined an elite group of conspirators whose mission was to kill the Führer. When their plot goes wrong and they're rounded up by the Gestapo, it has devastating consequences for his daughter Fay and his two young grandsons. The boys are seized by the SS. They're just 2 and 4 years old at the time, and they're taken to a Nazi orphanage where they're given new identities. And for Fay, this is the start of a terrifying journey through Europe's concentration camps as she struggles to stay alive. She has no idea whether she will ever see the boys again.
I mean, it's a remarkable story, and one that I really didn't know very much about before I read your book. If we go back to the start of the story, how old was Fay and how old were her children?
Well, Fay was 25 years. She was 25 when the boys were taken from her. They were just 2 and 4 years old. And at the time, she was living in a beautiful castle in the north of Italy. It was in Friuli, just about 50 miles east of Venice. and it belonged to her husband, to Talmo, whose family had owned it since the 13th century. When the SS turned up at the castle to arrest Faye and the children, de Talmo wasn't there. After the Nazis had invaded the north of Italy in September 1943, he had joined the Italian resistance and he was in hiding in Rome. Faye could have gone there to be with him, but she decided not to because her priority was the children and she wanted to protect them. She loved them more than anyone else. So she decided to stay at the castle because she thought it would be the safest place for the boys.
Did her German status lend her any degree of safety or lack of social sort of kind of abuse, I suppose, before this happened?
Faye sort of unwittingly became caught up in the Nazi machine. She, after Hitler's troops invaded the north of Italy, a division of the Luftwaffe occupied the castle. They took it over. And she was placed in an awkward position because she spent most of her life in Italy and saw herself really as Italian, but she was in fact German by birth. And to begin with, she thought, you know, she'd grown up in Rome when her father was ambassador there. And to begin with, when the Germans occupied the castle, she thought that she might be able to use her Germanness to help the locals, to prevent them from being persecuted in any way by the Germans. But at the same time, because of the boys, she had to, you know, welcome the German occupiers. So the Italians thought that she was collaborating with the Germans, and she was placed in a very awkward position because the Germans wanted her to tell them where partisans were hiding and any other information which related to the Italian resistance who were trying to, who were obviously attacking the Germans during that time.
Okay. I mean, does her ability to do that, to be able to kind of walk the line so well, tell us anything about her personality? And indeed, what did you learn about her personality in the course of writing this book?
Well, she was, I mean, to begin with, she was a young mother, slightly naive because she'd been spent her war in this idyllic place, which until that moment had been untouched by the war. But as her story progresses through the book, you just have to marvel at her courage. And you first see this when the Germans are in occupation at the castle, because she could have actually, de Talmo had arranged for her to go to, if needs be, to some relatives in the south. But she chooses to stay there because not only does she still think it's the safest place for the children, but she wants to protect de Talmo's employees, the Italian, the contadini, the peasant farmers on the land who have worked for his family for generations. And so she does things like ask the SS leader to tea, who was one of the most brutal men. He'd killed some 5,000 Poles when the Nazis had swept through Eastern Europe and was now the chief SS man in Udine, the nearby town. And she actually asked this man whether he will suspend the sentence of an Italian resistance man who's been caught by the SS. So she's very courageous and that obviously continues as all these terrible, terrible things happen to her.
Mm. And she suffers through so much, not least, of course, the fact that her children were taken from her. I mean, did that happen with no warning? What were the events of the 27th of September 1944?
Well, what was so incredibly cruel about it, but hardly surprising, since it was an operation instigated by the SS. When the SS officers turn up at the castle, Faye is told that she and the boys are just wanted for routine questioning, and that they must go to Innsbruck, which was, you know, not that far away, Innsbruck in Austria. And when she gets there, to her amazement, she's put up in a luxury hotel in the centre of the town, and she and the boys are allowed to play in the garden at the back of the hotel. They get given lots of food. And she assumes that the next day she'll be going home after she's had an interview with the SS at their headquarters. But even before that interview happens, two SS women turn up at the hotel and forcibly seize the children. And Faye is then taken to Innsbruck prison, where she stays for 3 weeks before beginning this horrendous journey through Europe.
Why was she moved so many times, and to what kind of place was she moved?
Well, I think we have to go back first to the 20th of July plot, the 20th of July 1944 plot, because that was the plot that her father had been indirectly involved with, and it was why he was arrested and subsequently executed. And it was the bomb plot, where Klaus von Stauffenberg had planted a bomb in a briefcase under a desk where Hitler was holding a military briefing, and it came very, very close to killing him. After that had failed, Hitler vowed revenge on the plotters, but not just the plotters, on their families as well. And Himmler, in order to do this, came up with a medieval law called Sippenhaft, which meant blood guilt. In other words, the relatives of the plotters were as guilty as the plotters themselves. And in the 3 months after the 20th of July, hundreds of relatives were rounded up, grandparents, wives, cousins, and that was why Faye and the boys were also taken. All these prisoners are Himmler's personal prisoners, and as the war goes on, he decides that they could be possibly used as hostages to save his own skin. And for this reason, he corrals them through Europe, because he needs to protect them. As the Russians advance, they need to be moved on. And this was why Faye and the group of prisoners she was with were moved endlessly from the northeast of Germany into the centre and back, and then finally to the Alps.
We should talk a bit about the kind of people that she was imprisoned with. Who did she meet while she was held captive? And did she strike up particular friendships with any of those people more than others?
Among these special prisoners of Himmler, there were European politicians, leading church figures like Dietrich Bonhoeffer. They were also members of Europe's royal families. And Faye, they were an incredibly tight group, because they were all together being moved constantly. And they were kept in conditions of great secrecy in the middle of places like Buchenwald and Dachau. And during this time, Faye fell in love with one of her fellow prisoners, who was the brother of Klaus von Stauffenberg, Alex von Stauffenberg.
And what kind of conditions were they held in?
Well, the special prisoners were held, as I said, in conditions of great secrecy, but they were also comparatively privileged. So they were given extra rations, and they weren't subjected to cruelty. But as Faye wrote in her account of her time, they witnessed the unimaginable brutality or sadism of the Nazi regime. She saw witnesses and executions. She saw people being setting off on forced marches, the death marches, as the Nazis were moving labour, you know, the workforce to work in armament factories in the West. And she smelt the smell of burning bodies from the pyres that the Nazis constructed to burn the dead.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
There are just so many characters. I mean, I think the book is a devastating account of personal sacrifice. You see the very best and the very worst of human nature. And it's a reminder of how fine that balance is between good and evil.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
At Outback Steakhouse, your wish is our command. Backed by popular demand, steak and lobster at a special price starting at $19.99. Come enjoy our bold center-cut sirloin seasoned with our signature blend of 17 spices and paired with a buttery, succulent lobster tail. Hurry in to Outback Steakhouse where your steak and lobster wishes come true at a price you can't miss. Steak and lobster, starting at $19.99. No rules, just right.
For some context, what was happening in the wider war during the time of her captivity?
She was her captivity began in October 1944, and she was held with this group of prisoners by the SS until the end of the war in Europe, until May. And at that time, the Russians were advancing from the east very rapidly. And so that area within, so the Reich was shrinking, and there were just, you know, the chaos was unimaginable. I mean, as they're moved from camp to camp, Faye and the others get caught up in a tide of something like a million refugees. And these were people who were fleeing from the Russians in the east, from countries, from formerly occupied countries like Hungary, Poland. And their situation was, the situation of these people is the collateral damage of the war is so stark in their stories. They're mostly women and children. They have had everything taken away from them, their homes, their livelihoods, their loved ones. And within this body of refugees moving through Europe are, of course, the concentration camp inmates who are being moved by the Germans to be used as a labour force. And this was a time of terrible forced marches where in freezing temperatures, and the SS just simply shot anybody who couldn't keep up with these marches.
What events led to her eventual freedom from this captivity?
Well, even up until the very last, Faye and the other prisoners were still at risk. Himmler was absolutely determined to use them in negotiations with the Allies. And so at the end of April 1945, he moved them to the Alps, to a hotel in the Alps. And this, of course, was one of the last, it was one of the last strongholds, one of the last of the Nazis' strongholds. And a lot of the senior men in the Nazi regime were fleeing there. And even when they're in that hotel and the war is over, Himmler has sent special SS death squads to kill them. They were ultimately saved because In the last days of April, there were 45. Let's just keep it simple. The Allies were tipped off that this group of special prisoners were holed up in a hotel, and the US Army was dispatched to rescue them.
Given the extent of the displaced people that you've described, how did she possibly go about finding these children who'd been taken from her?
Well, when the war came to an end, the boys could have been anywhere. They had false names. They were aged, well, they were three and five then. And of course, they didn't know who they were, but there was a chance that possibly Corrado, the eldest boy, could remember his real name. But Faye had no idea how they'd been treated, you know, whether trauma had obliterated any memory he had of who he really was. And not only that, Faye herself could not set out to find the boys after she was released from prison. And this was because there were very strict travel restrictions on Italians. They couldn't go more than 10 kilometres from their home. So she was in this awful position where she couldn't set out to find her boys. And at the time, the task of reuniting children with their relatives was in the hands of the Allies, and that they were prioritising when they were looking through children's homes or dealing with children who'd been found at the side of the road or railway lines. They were prioritising Jewish children and Germanised children. And Germanised children were the children who'd been stolen or by the SS to be raised as true Aryans. So it was a deeply traumatic time for Faye. There was nothing she could do. And so she and her husband, Talmo, made lots of posters, which they circulated to all authorities, to the Red Cross, to the Vatican, to all arms of the Allied administration in Central Europe. But there was nothing. And what was extraordinary was that it was actually Faye's mother, who was in Germany, who sets out to search for the boys. And that's a very interesting aspect of the book, because obviously, you know, a mother's love is an extraordinarily strong bond, but that bond that exists between a grandmother and her grandchildren is also very strong.
There's some remarkable characters in this book. Were there any that for you stood out, or perhaps that you saw in a new light?
Well, as you say, I mean, there are just so many characters. I mean, I think the book is a devastating account of personal sacrifice. You see the very best and the very worst of human nature. And it's a reminder of how fine that balance is between good and evil. And I suppose on the evil side, it was the political officer at the castle who betrayed Faye and the boys to the SS, who was just the most horrific man. His job was to instill Nazi ideology into the airmen, but he didn't have to give them away. And in fact, in the run-up to that time, he'd been incredibly close to the boys. He'd let them ride in the airmen's trucks. He'd allowed Corrado, the eldest boy, to play with his telephone. So it makes his betrayal doubly worse. And then, of course, Ulrich von Hassel, his courage was really inspirational. I mean, after the plot fails, he could have run away. As a number of the plotters did, but he thought it was dishonourable to flee, so he just stayed at his desk in Berlin, waiting for the Gestapo to come and get him.
What has happened to the boys during all this time? And did it leave any sort of permanent lasting damage on them, I suppose?
Well, we know very little about... Well, there are no written records of what their life was like at the Nazi orphanage. These were all destroyed at the end of the war by the people who'd been employed there. There is the account of one woman, and it seems that actually they were relatively well treated. So when the war ended, the SS officials who'd been in charge of the orphanage destroyed all the records. So there is no record of how the children were treated, and indeed, in many instances, of what happened to them.
How did you go about researching this story?
There were some absolutely incredible records at the castle in Italy, the family castle in Italy. Faye kept a diary throughout her time. She wrote up an account of her experiences at the end of the war, which was when she was reunited with Detelma, which was a kind of form of therapy for her, because at that point the children were missing, and it was something she also wanted, having had such a dramatically different experience during the war to that of her husband. It was a way of trying to rebuild her marriage again. So there were some wonderful sources there. Faye wrote letters all her life. Ulrich von Hassel kept a diary, and that is a remarkable document. I mean, it offers a terrifying glimpse as to what it was like to be in clandestine opposition in wartime Berlin. And there are also a lot of military and intelligence records that I was able to consult. The records of belonging to SOE agents who were parachuted behind the lines into the north of Italy and who worked with the partisans, and which give us a glimpse of what life was like during that time and the risks they faced.
Are there any areas that you weren't able to find out information? And perhaps if you could ask a question of someone involved in this story, what would you like to ask?
Really, the gaping hole in the research were the records relating to the orphanage where the boys were held. And I actually went to Austria to visit the place, which was high up in the Alps, outside in Innsbruck. And even today, I found people were tight-lipped about what had gone on in the war, because, of course, many of their ancestors had worked at that orphanage and knew what had happened there. But it was impossible to find out details of how the children were treated and what their lives were like, because these records were destroyed at the end of the war.
And finally, why do you think this story is an important one, and why does it deserve to be better known?
The story is heartbreaking and horrifying. As I said, it's a devastating account of personal sacrifice. But it's also a very uplifting story, and to be reminded of such selfless courage and such integrity, for me, when I was writing it, was inspirational. So I hope that's what readers will take away from the book.
How did Faye come to terms with all of this trauma and all of these really horrible events that she'd have to suffer through?
Well, I think her conscience haunted her for the rest of her life. I mean, like so many survivors of the camp, she suffered from survivor's guilt. And particularly because, as she wrote, in her case, her experience had been comparatively mild. And I think her affinity with the victims of the Holocaust and her need to answer the unanswerable question why led her to read many memoirs written by survivors after the war. And Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, an account of his imprisonment at Auschwitz and other camps, became a touchstone for her, so much so that until she died, she would pin quotes from the work on her desk. And I think in her private struggle to come to terms with her own experiences, forgiveness was one of her central tenets. She viewed her suffering as an intrinsic part of her destiny, and felt that it should be taken as it came without bitterness or vengeance.
That was Catherine Bailey. Her book, Faye's War, The True Story of a Mother, Her Missing Sons, and the Plot to Kill Hitler, is available now, published by Penguin. Thanks for listening. This episode was produced by Ben Hewitt and Jack Bateman.